I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
It's the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. Welcome. Thanks for listening. Jazz coming off a victory over the Memphis Grizzlies, and it was certainly good to see the Jazz get back to their winning ways after that horrible road trip. So good to see the sky is not, in fact, falling for the Utah Jazz, but I understand why fans certainly thought it was, and certainly for a while it felt like it was. So the Jazz get the win over the Memphis Grizzlies. I thought they actually played pretty well. Ended up in a blowout. I know the reserves came in pretty late and were outscored by 9 when they were on the floor in the last couple of minutes. But truly, the Jazz controlled that game. But not only was Memphis bad, they were without their best player, Ja Morant. So they were really bad. But sometimes that's how the NBA works. And that's a huge advantage. The Jazz are going to get that advantage again tonight when they take on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Thunder going to be without Danilo Gallinari, who could give the Jazz some problems, though this Thunder team is not necessarily designed very well to kill the Jazz, meaning you are going to have Steven Adams down low for most of the game, which allows Rudy Gobert to stay down low most of the game, and when that happens, the Jazz defense works, and when the Jazz defense works, the offense tends to work a little bit better. So that's a good sign for the Jazz in the game tonight. We'll talk a little bit more about that with Maddie Lee, who covers the Thunder, a name you'll remember. She used to work here in the state. She'll join me coming up here in about 5 or 10 minutes, giving us a breakdown on what's gone well with the Thunder. We're off to a surprising start this year at 10-12. So not a team to overlook. Jazz fans saw them on the opening game of the season. But let's talk about what's going on with the Jazz. Mike Conley's going to miss another game tonight. He's still dealing with that hamstring injury. It doesn't sound like it's anything necessarily to be scared of or worried about. I know I was on the floor before the game against Memphis, and Mike Conley was out there shooting around and looked good. Now, you know, he's not dealing with a broken ankle or anything, so you can move around with a injured hamstring. You just really can't push it because that's when they get re-triggered and hurt, and you end up with a Carlos Boozer situation, which Jazz fans will remember all too well. So certainly understandable to be careful with Mike Conley, and truthfully, I think there's some upside to letting this Jazz roster figure out how to fix one problem at a time, because I think it's fair to say Mike Conley's been a problem for the Jazz so far this season. Now, that doesn't mean he's unfixable. It doesn't mean he's the reason the Jazz haven't won enough games or anything like that. You're trying to work a guy into the rotation, and it's hard to do. And not only are you trying to work Mike Conley into the rotation, you're trying to adjust to how defenses are playing against you, because every team in the NBA certainly now feels like they dropped the big. And that's taken away the lob from Rudy Gobert, or the Jazz have faced a lot of teams that can stretch the floor out, and that pushes Rudy Gobert out of the paint. That's getting more and more common as the three-pointer continues to take over the league. Those have been issues for the Jazz. And then trying to figure out the chemistry of a starting lineup that has Bojan Bogdanovic in it now and Royce O'Neal in it. It's a full-time starter who certainly has had a great year this year, but doesn't do all the things that the Jazz did last year as a starting lineup as far as their consistency and comfort moving the ball. So the Jazz are working on those problems. And then, of course, the bench is brand new from last season. Jeff Green's trying to figure out his role. Ed Davis is both trying to figure out his role and is coming back from an injury. Emmanuel Mudiay is trying to prove he belongs in the league. Dante Exum's trying to do the same thing while coming back from an injury. So there's a lot on the Jazz plate. In that sense, getting the guy in Mike Conley, who's maybe the biggest piece of this championship that the Jazz are trying to build as far as additions go this offseason, or at least they thought was going to be the biggest addition this offseason, taking him out of the equation for a minute and trying to fix some of those other problems might not be the worst thing the Jazz have faced. And I think that's actually going to end up being a blessing in disguise. Hopefully you can find some of those problems or fix some of those problems while Conley's out tonight, and you know, maybe the next game we'll see how quickly he can come back. And then when he does, you can focus a little bit more on getting him going. I do think Quinn Snyder's had a lot on his plate as far as what to fix, when to fix it, which order to fix it, and I have no doubt he's going to fix all those problems. I do think you have to recognize how hard it is to fix new things or major problems in the NBA, and the Jazz had some major problems early in the season. So trying to fix your starting point guard, trying to fix your entire bench unit, trying to fix how teams are defending your best players and Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell has been an issue. And then I think the Jazz, even though they're glad this is the case, I think they're getting more out of Bojan Bogdanović than they were expecting. So they've had to readjust on what that means. Whose shots does he take? Where does he get shots? Do those need to come from Donovan Mitchell, who's not been the most efficient player again this year? I think those are all questions the Jazz are having to address, and I think that's what they're running up against. So I think taking Mike Conley out of this equation can have some benefit in the long run, though certainly the healthier you are, the better you are. And anytime the Jazz miss out on an opportunity to build chemistry, it kicks that can a little bit further down the road. Now, there has been some upside, as I mentioned, I think, and part of it has been getting Joe Ingles going, getting Joe Ingles some opportunity to play point guard where, truthfully, you just don't have enough between Dante Exum and Emmanuel Mudiay as far as point guard minutes to cover what you're missing when Mike Conley's out. And I think Donovan Mitchell always does a good job playing point guard. We saw him do that last year when Rubio and Howell Neto and Dante Exum were out. Donovan stepped in and played really well. And he's done that again. I think he played well against Memphis, and he's going to continue to do that. You know, Donovan Mitchell shot over 50% for the first time in a couple of weeks for the Jazz, and maybe that's just the comfort of having the ball in his hands. And again, maybe we go back to this conversation I think every Jazz fan was having last January of whether that's his natural position, whether that's where he's going to be best served and you know, be most effective for the Jazz. And I don't think that is off the table yet. I don't think the Jazz are you know, taking that off the realm of possibilities. In the future, I think when they signed Mike Conley, or I should say traded for Mike Conley, that was the concept. But we'll have to see if Conley can get it back to where he was playing at that Memphis level this season with the Jazz, and then what he does with his player option this offseason, and then what he does the year after that. So those are questions for the Jazz. One of the guys who stepped up and played well, as I mentioned, is Joe Ingles. I know the Jazz named him their player of the week, shooting 41% from the three-point line over the last week. Those are huge signs for Joe Ingles. And I did a deep dive on what's really been wrong with Joe this season. Is it just moving to the bench? Is it the players he's playing with? What's the main cause? And I think I was honestly surprised to find out a lot of it, and it passes the eye test, a lot of it is Joe's just missing shots that he hit last season. I looked at NBA stats. If you don't ever go there, you should check it out. If you want to look at some of the numbers, it's amazing how well they've got shots mapped out, and you can look at every shot a player's ever taken. You can go and check, you know, how close is the nearest defender. It's fantastic, and it's worth, you know, playing around with if you're an NBA geek like I am. It's fun to go do. But looking at Joe Ingles' shooting, I mean, this year on open shots, which is a defender is 4 to 6 feet away from him, which is somewhat significant. I mean, think closeout situations. Think, you know, a fast break situation where you're basically alone on a layup. Joe Ingles last year shot 43%, which is a great number. This year, that's down to 39%. So that's a 4% drop, which is somewhat significant. 4%'s a lot, you know, especially when you recognize nobody shoots better than 50%. Losing 4% is a lot. It's 10% of how well you're shooting the ball. That's significant, and the Jazz have noticed that. And then when he's wide open, the shots have actually gotten worse. Wide open means the greatest or the closest defender is further than 6 feet away. So on those numbers, Joe Ingles has dropped from 42% last year, which is, again, absolutely terrific, to 35%. So wide open looks, Joe Ingles is catching the ball, and he's just missing. And I don't know if that's a rhythm thing. I don't know if it's just, you know, a cold streak to start the season. But those are issues that Joe Ingles has to fix. And those aren't issues that I think necessarily Quinn Snyder can fix or the players around him can fix, unless he's absolutely catching the ball in a horrible spot. It's being thrown to his ankles or way over him. and he has to reset and isn't finding his rhythm. And, you know, that was something Ricky Rubio was good at, was giving you the ball in that passing pocket or that shooting pocket. Otherwise, I don't know how to explain why Joe Ingles has seen this drop off other than he's just having a cold streak. And I think it's both a bad thing and a good thing. It's a bad thing because it's not a quick fix for Quinn Snyder to just go out and throw Joe with a different lineup and say, okay, that's going to fix your problems, because I do think that happens. It's something Joe needs to fix. It's also a nice sign because Quinn doesn't have to go out and do a lot of different things to get Joe going. Joe, most importantly, needs to hit open shots. That's what he gets paid for. That's what his skill set is. He was the Jazz best shooter for the last 3 years, and he needs to get back to that level, and I would bet he does. Traditionally, great shooters don't have that steep of a fall off in one offseason, and I think that's going to be something the Jazz come back on and see Joe Ingles get those numbers back. And that's going to be a huge plus for the Jazz. That's going to get this offense going. And again, over his last few games, it looks like he certainly has, and it'll be something to watch as they go up against the Oklahoma City Thunder tonight. Now, when he's looking at his bench play, I do think it's worth noting how different that is, especially without Derek Favors any longer on this roster with that second unit, where Joe was so good playing the pick and roll with the big guy who really knew how to roll to the basket. And Favors was great at it, and we know Rudy Gobert is great at it. And now when he plays with Jeff Green or Ed Davis, that's just not their game. Ed Davis isn't an offensive threat other than the offensive glass. Jeff Green is much better spreading the floor, meaning Joe Ingles is forced to create something for himself off the dribble. If you look at some of his numbers as far as how often he has to dribble before he puts a shot up, the frequency with which that's happening is significantly higher than it was last season. So he's not getting as many catch-and-shoot opportunities, which is also hurting his shooting percentages. So I think that's a real issue. It's also probably more significant to why his assist numbers are down from nearly 6 last year to under 4 this year. Now, he had 10 against Memphis. He had 8 against the Philadelphia 76ers on the road a couple of days ago. Those are good signs, and I think one of the things you saw Quinn Snyder do was teaming him a little bit more with Rudy Gobert, and I think you can work on that. I think you can find those minutes. You just have to figure out where does that really benefit the Jazz the most, because while that seems like an easy fix, are you going to take Royce O'Neal off the floor? Royce O'Neal's net rating is the third best on the Jazz, behind Rudy Gobert and behind Bojan Bogdanovic. Well, are you going to take Bojan Bogdanovic off the floor? Well, no, he's better than Joe Ingles. So you don't want to take those minutes away. And then are you going to take Donovan Mitchell off the floor? Maybe that's something you toy with. Maybe you find a way to get Donovan Mitchell fewer minutes on the floor. You put Joe at the point guard or the two, and you put Emmanuel Mudiay or Dante Exum next to him, and you find rest for Donovan Mitchell. Becomes a bigger issue, though, when Mike Conley comes back, because there's just fewer minutes to be pushed around, because Mike Conley deserves 25 to 30 minutes a night. So I think figuring out how to get those minutes together is actually probably a tougher answer than a lot of Jazz fans want to think it is. It seems like it would be pretty logical to just put him in the starting lineup. I don't know who you pull out in that situation at this point. I think everyone who's starting for the Jazz are probably the Jazz 5 best players. And that's what you got to do. I think that's the smartest thing you can do. I don't know if Joe Ingles is still one of the Jazz 5 best players. If he bounces back like he did last season or 2 years ago, he definitely is. But in a perfect world, you know, Royce O'Neal starting and playing the position he has as the defender who shoots 46% from the 3-point line, that's perfect for this lineup. Can't play Rudy's position. Can't play Mike Conley's position, most likely. Can't play Donovan's position. Can't play Bojan Bogdanovic's position. Or if he can, he doesn't do it as well. So I think Quinn Snyder's starting the right 5 guys. I think figuring out how to get Joe Ingles going is a priority for the Jazz. I do think it's a tougher answer than it looks like on paper. The good news is if Joe Ingles starts shooting better, I think it eases a lot of that burden for Jazz fans, for that Jazz bench, and for Quinn Snyder overall. All right, let's switch it up. Talk a little bit more about the Jazz opponent tonight. She covers the Oklahoma City Thunder for Oklahoman Sports. You can find her on Twitter at Maddie_M_Lee. It's my friend Maddie Lee. Maddie, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thanks for jumping on. Kind of a weird year so far for the Oklahoma City Thunder as they get ready to take on the Jazz tonight. We'll address some of the actual issues on the floor tonight, but obviously a crazy offseason, unloading as much as they did. The Paul George news shook the world, and then it seemed like a matter of time before Russell Westbrook would get traded, and I think that even happened quicker than anyone expected. So going into the year, what were you expecting from this Thunder team?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm still recovering from whiplash from this summer. Expectations were really, really low. I mean, you have a ton of new players coming in. You don't know how they're going to mesh together. Obviously, we knew that Shea was going to be an exciting young talent, and, you know, we keep saying the point guard of the future, but really, yeah, he's probably going to be the cornerstone of this rebuild that will, Bressy doesn't like to say that they're rebuilding now. He likes to say that that's coming in the future because they haven't done the full teardown yet. So really, we expected it to be a very uncohesive team. You have so many point guards on this team, a lot of guys who are going to have to be playing out of position, and a mix of guys who you think, you know, a few who you think will be there for the future in the long haul, but then other guys like Chris Paul and Danilo Gallinari, where you're like, they certainly don't fit the timeline. So we're still in that weird little half and half, you know, 1 foot in one in the past and 1 foot in the future rebuild. And but they've actually really kind of surprised people, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what I would say, too. I mean, I think Jazz fans have probably had their heads down, just kind of trying to focus on what the issues have been with this team and why they haven't started as well as a lot of people hoped. And I look at the standings now, and the Thunder are in the playoff picture. Now they're in the eighth seed, but they're tied with the Suns. And I'm just thinking, like, I didn't expect that. I thought the big question for them would be, with the veterans they have and the expectation that they were going to start a rebuild, there wouldn't be buy-in. So why have they bought in? Yeah. Who bought in? Who's leading that?
Chris Paul really has done an exceptional job of really being all in. And we didn't know what to expect, right? It would be very, you know, no one would blame him if he had came in and just kind of went through the motions. You know, obviously he would want to put his best foot forward in terms of trying to wipe away some of the drama and stuff from Houston, but he has really been all in on helping develop that young talent. He and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Darius Bazley are all like best friends, and I asked Shea why they get along so well, because, you know, Shea's 21, Bazley's 19, and then you have veteran Chris Paul
is
clicking with them so well, right, 72-year-old Chris Paul, and he said, you know, Chris is kind of just like a big kid, and so they all just get along together. They're constantly just, you know, throwing jabs at each other and seem to genuinely enjoy each other's presence, and so I think that was something that we didn't necessarily expect, for Chris Paul to be making these, honestly, what looked like were going to be lasting connections. And with the young players, it's so important because then he's helping the development and helping the next phase of the Thunder, even, you know, as we're assuming that he's not going to be there for the whole phase of the rebuild.
Is that what it feels like covering the team or being in the locker room? Or do you get the sense that anyone, you know, the coaches or the front office feels that way, that, hey, we're just waiting for the next shoe to drop, you know, mid-December or before the trade deadline, these major pieces are still going to be moved?
Yeah, I don't expect them to stay. They've done a good job of not in the locker room. It doesn't feel like they're waiting for that. They seem pretty bought in, but you can't expect that, you know, Danilo Gallinari thinks that he's going to be here for, you know, even the rest of this year, because he's on an expiring contract. It would make sense to move him, and it would be the best thing for the Thunder, because even though he can help winning now, that's not the goal. And so if the Thunder can move him, I think that's going to be best for the franchise. I think that players understand that. They're all in now on trying to be as competitive as they possibly can be, but there are still some glaring issues with the roster construction, because it's not built to be a winning roster, you know? And so even if they, for some strange reason, decided to just throw the whole rebuild out and try to win this season, they would run into some pretty serious roadblocks.
So let's just play a quick game here. I'm going to ask you, of the top seven players by minutes played on this Thunder team, next year, are they with the team or are they not with the team? You just give me your best guess. And I think the
audience... Oh, this is fun. I'm going to get people tweeting at me when I'm wrong.
The top easy one is Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He's going to be around, right?
Yes.
Danilo Gallinari?
No.
Dennis Schroeder?
That one's tough. I think the way he's playing, the Thunder may be able to get something done. I'm going to say no.
Chris Paul?
he's a tough contract to move. I think the Thunder wants to, so I'm going to say no, but obviously that depends on the other teams in the league and who's willing to spend that type of money to potentially boost their postseason chances.
Steven Adams.
Yes.
Why Steven Adams? I love Steven Adams. I mean, Jazz fans have a long history of seeing him in the playoffs, and you know, there's the infamous workout between Steven Adams and Rudy Gobert before those two both got drafted. Why is he such a mainstay, or why would he be in the plans long term? Because I think there's actually some contenders. I look at a team like the Dallas Mavericks that might be one piece away, and I think, man, you put him in the middle, and you have to go up against the Lakers, and all of a sudden, it's not Anthony Davis at the four, and then another big guy at the five, who they're just killing people with size. I think that makes too much sense to not move him, but of course, the Thunder have to get something back.
Yeah, for me, Steven's one where I would not be shocked if they traded him, right? But I think he's probably one that they're not actively going out and making calls to try to move. But if someone called and was like, hey, we need Steven Adams, they'd obviously have that conversation. And so it all depends on what the market looks like for him. And he's a good foundational piece to kind of keep a little bit of continuity through this weird phase. And the Thunder really, I mean, not that they have been that focused on making sure that they have strength in every position, because they're very short. They were very deep in the wing before, and now they're extremely short with injuries. But with him, you then look like if you have to get a center back for them to still not be, you know, starting Nerlens Noel,
sure,
who is a perfectly capable player, but also definitely a rotation player. So he's one where I don't think that they're actively trying to move, but I wouldn't also, really, most of the roster, I wouldn't be surprised if they were traded. That makes sense.
Two more names. Hamidou Diallo.
Sure.
Is he going to be around?
Yeah. Yes. Unless he ends up getting thrown in as a part of another trade.
And then Nerlens Noel.
I'm going to say yes, because he's a financially viable piece to keep on, and I don't know how many people are calling about him.
Is there anyone I missed there? I mean, is it Darius Bazley? I mean, is that the other young piece of this core that they're going to rely on?
Darius Bazley has looked really good. And then one who has just emerged in the last few days is Lu Dort, who, undrafted free agent. He was a one-and-done at ASU, Arizona State. And he's been playing for the last couple games because, like I mentioned, the Thunder have had so many injuries recently at wing, and he is an incredible defender for such a young player. They put him last night on Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. This is his second NBA game ever, and he, you know, obviously made some mistakes, but fared surprisingly well.
He's got a body type that I think works in the NBA. I mean, we see guys like him that stick around. Now, he's not Donovan Mitchell, but he's freakishly athletic. He's kind of that low center of gravity, huge shoulders, big body kid.
Yeah, he can run you over. And yeah, I think if the Thunder can get value out of him, obviously, as an undrafted free agent, even if he just ends up being a rotation player, that's a huge win.
Okay, so by the end of the season, is the Thunder's front office, is the goal different than the players on the floor? I mean, is the idea to have this thing down around 25, 30 wins?
The goal is definitely different. I think the Thunder, I mean, and we'll see that progress as they start making roster moves. Obviously, December 15th is going to be a big date for the Thunder coming up. But front office, it's not in their best interest to win, because even though they have all this draft capital, a lot of it's in the far future. You know, they have draft picks out to 26, and then those are draft picks that they don't have any control over, right? So who knows what the Rockets are going to be like in 2026, but the Thunder can control how many wins they have this year. And so it's definitely in the long-term, in the franchise's best interest long-term, for the Thunder to lose a lot of games this year. I think it helps the new lottery format where they don't have to completely bottom out, you know, but they still are not making the playoffs would be, is not the goal, right? Like that wouldn't even really be a win for this team unless you're talking about like fan engagement, but like they're going to be bad for several years to come. And so getting like one fourth inning, you know, maybe hurrying that process up in the future for one little playoff run, not really what this team is looking to do.
So the Jazz haven't been playing particularly well lately, though they kind of turned it around in their last game, but it was against Memphis. There's still a couple of games over 500, though, three games over 500, so they're feeling okay about the team. They get Oklahoma City tonight on the second night of a back-to-back. Danilo Gallinari is not playing tonight. He's injured or got hurt in the last game, so that's a huge plus for the Jazz. What has worked well for the Thunder when they're winning games? Why are they winning when they do win?
It's a lot of very even scoring. I think they had one game the other day where they had like five players all score 20. And so you have Dennis Schroeder coming off the bench and really providing a big push. You have, you know, obviously Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Steven Adams and Chris Paul in that starting lineup, and obviously Danilo Gallinari being able to provide the offense. And then when they're actually playing well and competing with good teams, it's got to be defense first, and really, especially their transition defense, when they get hurt is when they start letting teams score in transition and lose the control of the pace of the game.
It's Maddie Lee. She covers the Thunder for the Oklahoman in Oklahoma. You can find her on Twitter at Maddie_M_Lee. Maddie, look forward to seeing you tonight. Thanks for jumping on.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, there she is, Maddie Lee. Big thanks to Maddie for jumping on. Again, you can always subscribe, leave us your thoughts, rate us on iTunes or wherever you pick up your podcasts. We appreciate you doing that. And go to kslsports.com and find us there. Read all of our latest stories. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops, another edition of the Jazz Notes podcast. Tune in again later this week.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.